We're going to be reading from Canto 2, Chapter 3, which is entitled Pure Devotional Service, The Change in Heart. Just some very quick review. Chapter 1 is the first step in God realization. Then chapter 2 is the Lord of the Heart. Then chapter 3 is pure devotional service. There's a sequence. Canto 1, chapter 19, ended with some questions of Maharaj Prakshit. What were those questions of Maharaj Prakshit? Oh, scholars of Canto 1. What were the questions at the end of chapter 19?
What is the duty of a dying man?
What is the duty of one who's about to die? Yes. And how many times have you read that chapter? Many times, right? Dredge your memories. Go ahead. See what you come up with. It's related. What is that subject matter that one should hear, chant, and remember? He asks, what's the duty of people in general as well as one who is about to die? And what is that subject matter that one should hear, chant, and remember? So, chapter 3 begins, the first verse says, Maharaj Prakshit, as you have inquired for me, as to the duty of the intelligent man who is on the threshold of death, so I've answered you. And as well he answered, what is that subject matter? So it's in chapters 1 and 2, but chapter 2 ends with, one should hear, chant, and remember the personality of Godhead. And that's one's duty. One's duty is in conjunction with hearing and chanting, dedication of all things should be unto the personality of Godhead. So, in order to get to that conclusion at the end of chapter 2, chapter 1 has two main parts. Chapter 1 is form a conception of God. And it starts with form a conception of God. For people that have no conception of God, form a conception of God within nature. See God within nature, the universal form. See God within nature. And the other part is nivritti. Nivritti means detach oneself from worldly, sensual existence and form a conception of God. For starters, for people who have no conception of God, at least seeing God within nature. Second chapter. Once there's a conception of God and the concentration upon the conception of God becomes more prominent, then one can take up the process of meditation upon the form of God within the heart. And he goes so far as to say, leave aside that other conception of God within nature and take this one, God within the heart. And then there's a description of God within the heart, the process of meditation, and more on detachment, nivritti, more. It's prominent throughout the whole second canto. Because in order to go to point B, you have to give up point A. You can't hang on to point A and carry point A with you over to point B. You have to let go of material enjoyment. The mood, cultivating, gathering things for material enjoyment. And God conception, meditation of God upon the heart, hearing the message of the personality of Godhead. There are many, many, many other wonderful points. That's like skeletal. And the ending is, those two questions have been answered. Hear, chant, remember always about Harikatha. And all activities should be focused upon, in conjunction with hearing, focused upon serving the Supreme Lord. So then, here's this first verse. I'm going to cover quickly 9 verses in the beginning of chapter 3, which I'm sure you're going to remember next time I come back to visit you, because you don't want to be embarrassed like this time. You don't remember what happened last time. Okay, good. Very attentive. Shukadeva Goswami said, Maharaj Parikshit, as you have inquired from me as to the duty of the intelligent man who is on the threshold of death, so I have answered you. Purport. In human society, all over the world, there are millions and billions of men and women, and almost all of them are less intelligent, because they have very little knowledge of the spirit soul. So, Prabhupada didn't, he doesn't mess around, he just... The standard of intelligence is knowing what is eternal. And those that aren't pursuing the eternal, but rather they're hanging on to the temporary, they'll never know what is the eternal. Even theoretically, what to speak of practically. So he says, almost all of them have a wrong conception of life, for they identify themselves with the gross and subtle material bodies, which they are not, in fact. They may be situated in different high and low positions in the estimation of human society, but one should know definitely that unless one inquires about his own self beyond the body and the mind, his activities are total failures. So there's Prabhupada set the bar up. Below human, or in with an active intelligence that acquires beyond the temporary. Therefore, out of thousands and thousands of men, one may inquire about his spirit self, and thus consult the revealed scriptures like Vedanta Sutra, Bhagavad Gita, and Srimad Bhagavatam. But in spite of reading and hearing such scriptures, unless one is in touch with a realized spiritual mastery, cannot actually realize the real nature of the self, etc. So, first comes inquiry, and that goes to the scriptures, but then realization. So scriptures must be accompanied by the guidance of a realized spiritual master, and without that guidance, one isn't going to receive realization, is the point. Then, out of thousands and hundreds of thousands of men, someone may know what Lord Krishna is, in fact. This is all discussed in Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's discussed in Brihad Bhagavatamrita also. It's very Lord, in Chaitanya Charitamrita it is said that Lord Krishna, out of his causeless mercy, prepared the Vedic literature in the incarnation of Vyasadeva for reading by the intelligent class of men in a human society which is almost totally forgetful of all genuine relation with Krishna. So that's a challenge, yeah? People that are in the age of Kali, practically devoid of any understanding, even any inclination to inquire, what to speak of approaching of the scriptures, what to speak of guidance of a spiritual master, what to speak of understanding the difference between the individual soul and the supreme soul, what to speak of understanding Krishna. So Vyasadeva compiled literature for that group of people. Challenge. Even such an intelligent class of men may be forgetful in their relation with the Lord. That's people that take the literatures that Vyas compiled and really apply themselves. In the previous chapter, chapter 2, text number 35, close to the end of the chapter, there's a very interesting verse. Where Shukadeva Goswami says to Maharaj Parikshit, the personality of Godhead Lord Shri Krishna is in every living being along with the individual soul. And this fact is perceived and hypothesized in our acts of seeing and taking help from the intelligence. It's a fabulous, intricate purport where one can step by step by step not exactly prove the existence of God, but come to know the existence of God by distinguishing things. I won't go through the whole purport, verse and purport, but by taking help from the intelligence, one can understand there's a distinction between the soul and the supreme soul within the same body. Beautiful purport. But even such capable people who can make that discernment may be forgetful of their relationship with the Supreme Lord. Just like a yogi. There are some yogis who, by seeing the Super Soul, they think, that's me. I'm God. Because the desire to become God is very strong. So the materialist may think he's God. The impersonalist may think he's God. Meditator may also think he's God. But the relationship between the individual and the Supreme Lord is not just that it's subtle, it's our disposition being in the material world is such that we turn our attention away from him. And when we turn our attention, even when we're trying to meditate upon him, that disposition is very strong. Very strong. Even such an intelligent class of men may be forgetful of their relation with the Lord. The whole Bhakti Yoga process is, therefore, a revival of that lost relation. This revival is possible in the human form of life, which is obtained out of the evolutionary cycle of 8,400,000 species of life. The intelligent class of human being must take a serious note of this opportunity. Not all human beings are intelligent. So the important human life, the importance of human life, is not always understood. Therefore, manishinam means thoughtful and is particularly used here. Manusheshu manishinam. A devotee needs to be, Prabhupada taught this repeatedly, a devotee needs to be thoughtful. An application of thoughtfulness is that we don't, a devotee, one who is advancing in spiritual life, doesn't just do, like, you know, do the do's and avoid the don'ts. Devotional service is far more than just ditties. Yes? Do this, don't do that. You can create a machine that does this and doesn't do that. Where's Krishna consciousness? So the intent behind it, the conscious thought behind the activities that we do, being consciously present while we do each of the things that we do, refrain from each of the things that we refrain from, that's Krishna consciousness. So the devotee is thoughtful. And thoughtful persons will capture this message. From the preface, the introduction to Bhagavad Gita. Introduction to Bhagavad Gita, page 7 at the bottom, two sentences. Lord Krishna descends specifically to reestablish the real purpose of life when man forgets that purpose. Simple. What's the purpose of life? Even then, out of many, many human beings who awaken, oh, that's the purpose of life. There may be one who actually enters into the spirit of understanding his position, and for him this Bhagavad Gita is spoken. The purpose of life. And so it's not achieved just by recitation, reciting verses, memorizing verses, behaving this way, refraining from that way. Those things are necessary, that's goodness. Transcendence is to enter into the spirit of the understanding. The spirit of the understanding that says we have an eternal relation with Krishna. This human form of life is meant, it's designed, it's got like a little tag on it that says the purpose of this human form of life is to realize a relation with Krishna. We rip off the tag and just use it for something else. But the designer's intent was that one. I saw somewhere a slide. Does it make sense that you hook up a Rolls Royce to a plow and you go plow your field with a Rolls Royce? No. It's designed for something else. Tractor, yes. Horse, yes. Rolls Royce, no. This human form of life is, out of all the species, forms of life, it has a very, very special purpose. Realizing a relationship. You say God realization. Self-realization, relationship with God, relationship with Krishna. And also that's what's behind all of our activities of devotional service. And a devotee is thoughtful. Oh, yes, that's the purpose. And be present with that mindfulness of purpose when executing duties. A Munishinam person like Maharaj Parikshit must therefore take to the lotus feet of Lord Krishna and fully engage himself in devotional service, hearing, chanting, etc. of the holy name and pastimes of the Lord, which are Harikatamrita from the previous chapter. That's what we should engage ourselves in hearing. But while we're engaged ourselves in hearing, what's the purpose of that hearing? The relationship with Krishna. That's the purpose of people in general, and specifically the one who's about to die. Because he's king, or formerly was king, and naturally the king is concerned about his subjects. What's the duty of people in general, and specifically one who's about to die? Hearing and chanting, mindful of the purpose, the relationship with Krishna purpose. This action is especially recommended when one is preparing for death. So that's like a little review of the conclusion of chapter 2, the answer. So he's saying, you've asked your question, I've given you the answer. Then he takes it further into the realm of upasana. What's upasana? Upasana. Karmakanda, Jnanakanda, and Upasanakanda. What's upasana?
Devotion.
Huh?
Devotion.
Devotion. Yeah. It means, literally it means worship. Worship. Like I gave a seminar in New Vrindavan just this weekend on mantra upasana. Mantra upasana is a formal process where one worships through the medium of mantra, where you may not have deity and paraphernalia and agni and yajna, and you may not have all those things. Just through mantra, you can worship the personality of God through mantra alone. Mantra can be accompanied by yajna and agni and paraphernalia and archana. But mantra must be there. So, when it comes to worship, just like chapter 7 and chapter 9 of Bhagavad Gita describe different types of worship. Yes? Krishna describes some worship me as the one amongst many. What is that? Ekat vena bhatakt vena bahudha vishvato mukham. Krishna is saying there are different persons who worship me indirectly. They worship me as ahangra upasana. You know that process? Prabhupada described when yogi, he saw a sat on a stage and he sat in a big chair and he meditated himself because he's God. Aham upasana. Meditation upon worship of oneself. Now Krishna did that. When Krishna arose every morning in Dwaraka, described in the 10th canto, he would hear the rooster crow and it was time to rise, and he would rise, much to the disappointment of his queen, and he would do his sadhana, take his bath, and go and worship the Supreme. But it just happened the Supreme was himself, so he worshipped himself. Prabhupada described this yogi sat on a stage, put some paraphernalia, sat before a mirror and worshipped himself. And everyone was, oh, he's God. But, you know, accepting that the self is actually Brahman, then one worships Brahman. That's the process. Ekatvena, pratakdvena bahudha, that's demigod worship. Bahudha, pratakdvena, bahudha. Vishvatomukha, worship of the Vishvarup, the universal form. Those are upasanas, worships. So, Krishna describes those who worship in those ways. He accepts it as worship, but it's avidhi purvakam. It's done improperly. It's done without proper understanding. So that Bhagavad Gita message finds its way into the Bhagavatam in the following way. There's several verses where it's like dramatic how Shukadeva Goswami lists, if one wants this, one worships this deva. One wants that, one worships that deva. One wants another thing, one worships another deva. And another deva, and another deva, and another deva, and another deva, and another deva. And if one wants knowledge, one worships Vishnu. And if one wants none of those things, but wants a relationship with the Personality Godhead, he worships the Personality Godhead. It's like saying what he said previously, only repeating it in an expanded form. What he said previously is, those who are intelligent do not take shelter of sense gratification or seeking happiness in worldly pleasures. He described two chapters worth of that. Then what do they do? They worship the personality of Godhead. They don't worship this one, that one, that one, this one, that one. Which is a sign of that they've understood what the purpose of that self-inquiry is. Clear? Here's the list. Text, number 2 through 7. One who desires to be absorbed in the personal Brahmajyoti effulgence should worship the master of the Vedas, parentheses, Lord Brahma or Brahaspati, the learned priest. One who desires powerful sex should worship the king of heaven, Indra. The one who desires good progeny should worship the great progenitors called the Prajapatis. One who desires good fortune should worship Durga Devi, the superintendent of the material world. One desiring to be very powerful should worship fire. One who aspires only after money should worship the Vasus. One should worship the Rudra incarnations of Shiva if he wants to be a great hero. If one wants a large stock of grains, he should worship Aditi. I'm not going to read the whole list. It's like two more times of that. If you want this, worship over here. One who desires a good wife should worship the Apsaras and the Urvashi society girls of the heavenly kingdom. One who desires domination over others should worship Lord Brahma, the head of the universe. One who desires tangible fame should worship the personality of Godhead. One who desires a good bank balance should worship the demigod Varuna. If one desires to be a greatly learned man, he should worship Lord Shiva. And if one desires a good marital relation, he should worship the goddess, the chaste goddess Uma, the wife of Lord Shiva. Take a deep breath. One should... goes on. Prabhupada's comment is, while these provisions are there in the Vedas, it's because Vyasa recognized who his audience was. They're not... His audience was not... is a Kali Yuga audience. They're not... I want to inquire about the eternal self audience. Even pious people are not thinking like that. So he provided all these worships. At the same time, just like in the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, highest is this, be absorbed in Krishna. And mind fixed upon him, intelligence always absorbed in him, abiding with him always. That's the goal. If one can't do that, follow the regulations of bhakti yoga. If one can't develop a desire to get to that stage, if one can't do that, try to work for him. If you can't do that, if you can't do that, if you can't do that. So Krishna is inclusive. He's encouraging everyone, but he's making clear what the standard is. So in this second canto, Nivritti. Strong, strong, very strong. Repeat it. Strong, very strong. So if one doesn't get the message, then one's not very intelligent. That means you don't want to get the message. You don't cross the street when the cars are, when it's rush hour traffic on the highway. Zoom. One shouldn't do such things. It's not good for one, it's not advisable, not good for your health, it's not good for your well-being. Taking notice of the repeated message of the scriptures, one should not indulge in those things. Or Prabhupada says it here. aspirations for material enjoyment by endeavoring persons are condemned. Such aspirations are something like the intoxication of the degraded human society. Intelligent persons should try to avoid these aspirations and seek instead the permanent life by returning back home, back to Godhead. Is this not what Rishabhdev, it is what Rishabhdev taught? Nayam deho deha bhajam nirloke. Don't, when you achieve the human form of life, don't waste it in the same pursuits, polished perhaps, but same pursuits of the hogs, dogs, camels, and asses. One should not do that. Rather, tapo divyam. Go to this detaching oneself for achieving the spiritual destination. My dear sons, Rishabhdev is instructing. Please do like that. Don't waste. It's a waste. And so it's a consistent instruction. Bhagavad Gita's instruction, second canto instruction, that's a fifth canto instruction. It's a theme of devotional teaching. Diminish this one over here, increase this one over here. And the increasing is through hearing and chanting, and then the dedication of one's activities to the Supreme. Death is inevitable for everyone, intelligent or foolish, but Maharaj Parikshit has been addressed by the Goswami as Manisi, or the man of highly developed mind, because at the time of death, he has left all material enjoyment and completely surrendered unto the lotus feet of the Lord by hearing his messages from the right person, Shukadeva Goswami. It doesn't happen just like that. If one has not cultivated that spirit at the time of death, one is reaching for those things that one is attached to. We need to cultivate attachment to the Supreme. So when that moment comes and things are just yanked away, you know, the body, our life air, any, you know, our sensual perception, are just, it's all taken away. Gradually or at once, it's taken away. For intelligent or foolish alike, it's taken away. And the intelligent person has this positive shelter. And because throughout life they've cultivated positive shelter, detachment from illusion, positive shelter. That's the Bhagavad Dharma. Text 8. One should worship Lord Vishnu or his devotee for spiritual advancement in knowledge and for protection of heredity and advancement of a dynasty. One should worship the various demigods. So it's a summary contrast. You want that which is eternal, spiritual advancement, and really true understanding of the spiritual realm. Worship Lord Vishnu or his devotees. And you want something temporary, worship the demigods. But it's already been stated, striving for that which is temporary is the behavior or the conduct of a fool, one who has not understood the purpose of the Vedas. But there are so many people who are doing that. So what can we say? They're foolish. I mean, they're foolish. They're pious foolish, but foolish. And if that which is eternal is not part of their inquisitiveness, and how to be well situated in that eternal atmosphere. Unfortunate to say it, but other than foolish, one pushpa akash. It's like pursuing a flower in the sky. What's it? What flowers don't grow in the sky? One could, you pursue a flower in the sky. That's just phantasmagoria. It doesn't exist. The soul does not find happiness in the temporary. It doesn't exist. Still, people pursue it in the name of religious life. And Vyas provided all of that. He provided all of that because persons are not prepared to surrender to Krishna. So that indirectly they can approach the Vedas and the Brahmanas and that which is extension from Narayan, so they can indirectly approach him. Because indirectly approaching him is better than not at all. That's all that they're prepared for. Such different classes of worshippers of different demigods may ultimately reach the respective planets of those demigods within the universe, but he who reaches the spiritual planets in the Brahmajyoti achieves the highest perfection. So, the quality of life that we lead now is going to determine the future. This moment is going to have very strong influence on the next moment. And the next moment has next strong influence on the following moment. And if we want, as we lead our life today, it's going to determine our next life. So we should cultivate pure devotional service. That's the message. And pure devotional service is anyabhilash to shunyam. Shunyam means zippo, zero. Nothing. Anya abhilash shunya. Other desires than the service of the personality of God, it is absent. Jnana karma dinavritam. But positively, anukulyena krishna nushimanam. So, one who desires nothing of material enjoyment should worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He goes on, text 9. This is our last verse. One who desires domination over a kingdom or an empire should worship the Manus. One who desires victory over an enemy should worship the demons. And one who desires sense gratification should worship the moon. But one who desires nothing of material enjoyment should worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I mean, that verse coming after all the other verses is like, it's just poetic. Put that poetic verse, you know, without those verses, it's still the message of the Bhagavatam. The message of the Bhagavatam is just beautiful, so poetically exquisite. We should worship that. What is the duty of the person, people in general? We should worship the personality of Godhead. It is clearly defined herein that persons impregnated with different desires have different modes of worship. But one who has no desire for material enjoyment should worship the Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna. And this worship process is called devotional service. So if we're not there, we should, very important, we should understand that's the goal, but I'm over here. So now what do? Because I want to reach the goal, but I have desires. Too many bad desires, but I've got desires, material desires. What to do? We practice devotional service mindful of what the goal is. And then we regulate desires according to the codes of the scripture. Meanwhile, cultivating transcendental life. We know what the goal is. And we're striving for that goal because we're thoughtful. We've heard it from the right sources. We actually captured what that message is. We've taken that message to our hearts, and that message is carrying us towards the goal. because we're attached to the message. We're attached to reaching Krishna. It takes thoughtfulness to do that. Pure devotional service means service to the Lord without any tinge of material desires, including the desire for fruitive activity and empiric speculation. This is Nectar of Devotion, Rupa Goswami. For fulfillment of material desires, one may worship the Supreme Lord, but the result of such worship is different, as will be explained in the next verse. Generally, the Lord does not fulfill anyone's material desires for sense enjoyment, but he awards such benedictions to worshippers of the Lord. For ultimately, they come to the point of not desiring material enjoyment. I'll read that again. For fulfillment of material desires, one may worship the Supreme Lord, but the result of such worship is different, as will be explained in the next verse. Generally, the Lord does not fulfill anyone's material desires for sense enjoyment, but he awards such benedictions to worshippers of the Lord, for they ultimately come to the point of not desiring material enjoyment. The example is Dhruva. I want a kingdom. I want a kingdom. I want a kingdom. I want to get back at Saruchi. I want a kingdom. Not just my father's kingdom, which I'm entitled to because I'm his son. Better than my father. Better than my father's father. Better than my father's father's father. I want a kingdom. Big time desire. So the statement is, generally the Lord doesn't reward such desires, but when the Lord does, he does it in such a way one no longer desires the sense gratification that goes along with that object. And this is the fruit of devotional service. What drives your colleagues who are studying in school to excel? It's pride and money. I can do it. I'm the best. When I get out of this learning process, I'll have a degree, and then with the degree I can earn money. With money I can enjoy, because money's the honey. So the drive is gross or subtle enjoyments. And as devotees, to the degree there's strength and devotion, those purposes change. It's not so that I can get this or get that. And if you don't have the motivation to get this or get that, you're going to have another motivation. Because otherwise, why continue? It's hard to continue. So the purpose for a devotee, the purpose of doing each and everything, needs to have driving it a higher purpose. A purpose of, in some manner or fashion, serving Krishna. Serving Krishna by serving the mission of his representative spiritual master, or those who are representing spiritual master, those that are representing disciplic succession. They understand they're moving about this world to give the message of Krishna, the mission of Krishna to the rest of the world. So let me use this situation, this facility, for a service to Guru and Krishna. And then that's the replacement drive or motivation. If to the degree that that's there, the expectation for sense gratification subsides. To the degree that that's absent, the expectation for sense gratification remains. And that expectation for sense gratification binds one to the material world, to the reactions of one's activities, and binds one to birth and death. So back to the earlier, the thoughtful person understands, whoops, that's not the purpose. That's not the mission of human life. Again, Lord Krishna descends specifically to reestablish the real purpose of human life when man forgets that purpose. Bhagavad Gita is spoken, the Bhagavatam is also spoken, to help remind us of that purpose. And our task, our success, is to comprehend and live according to the spirit of that understanding. The mission, what is the purpose of life? When one does so, the darkness of illusion, the darkness of sense gratification subsides. The harassment subsides. The conclusion is that one must minimize the desires for material enjoyment, and for this one should worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is described here as Param, or beyond anything material. Sripad Shankaracharya has also stated, Narayana Paroviyaktat, the Supreme Lord is beyond the material encirclement. So we're to introduce the topic of pure devotional service, which Shukadeva Goswami wants to do. He's describing what pure devotional service isn't. We need to know, yes? To need to know the difference between what people in the world may think of as devotional service, and make it very clear, this is devotional service and that isn't. It's worship, but it's not pure devotional service. It's not what the purpose of human life is, by design, by intent. That will help us understand better what pure devotional service is. Okay. Any thoughts on the verse or verses we covered?
Huh? Even someone like whose intent in approaching Lord is very material, like his whole focus is on some material benefit. Like, what is the dynamics that he gets? Because his whole intent was material, that his desire changes even in that case.
Like Dhruva?
Yes, but what is the mechanics of and how it works out that?
Well, there's several important steps. It's not like mechanics, but there's several important steps. One of them is that the first, in Dhruva's case, there's three or four major things that happen. His mother sent him to Vishnu, or did she indicate it? There's nothing that can be done because of this terrible thing that happened to you, except the personality of God that can correct anything. He can make anything happen. He's all powerful. So she, you know, pointed to the path to Lord Vishnu. Then the second, so that's Vartma Pradarshika Guru. So, but not fully qualified to deliver him. And she knew her limitations. Next is he made some endeavor to follow that path, but he didn't find Then he contacted Narada. Krishna sent Narada. And after some testing or examination of Dhruva, he then gave instructions to Dhruva. And Dhruva, very important, Dhruva felt extreme gratitude that Narada had actually given him this mercy, because without Narada he had no access, and he knew it. And he was pleading with him, you're a great personality. Surely you can give me the means to reach Vishnu. Because Narada was testing him, well, it's not easy. You're just a boy. Said different things. And the turning point, the change of heart, transformation component was his gratitude. But the gratitude was preceded by those other things. Then he went into the forest, in Mahavan, in Vrindavan, by the river Jamuna, and he, exactly as Narada had told him to do, and then he performed the practices that Narada told him to do. But that gratitude transformed, not only the practices transformed, but the gratitude transformed the material desire into having no more material desire. It just got displaced by desiring shelter of Vishnu. And the steps may play themselves out in different ways with different individuals, but the components are there, must be there. Narada describes very similar to Vyasa about his life. In Narada's case, it wasn't he had strong desire, but he was just a child. He didn't really know what's what. You can be thoughtful about what your purpose of life, what you're supposed to be doing. You do it every day. Go out the door every day and go somewhere and do something and come back. What's the purpose of all of that? You can say there's material purposes, but there's deeper purposes. How can I use those things to achieve the purpose of life? How do I use them in Krishna's service? It's important. More than important. It's essential. To be truly established in Krishna consciousness, it's not a secular teaching. So much for God, so much for me. It's not a secular, so much for the state. For God and for my family. It's not, my worldly duties and my spiritual duties. This isn't a secular teaching. So I would recommend be thoughtful in the devotional practices sufficiently so that strong consciousness awakens. You can carry that strong consciousness with you into the workplace. And apply that thoughtfulness. Ask yourself the question. Just like people, you know, do people ask themselves the question, the purpose of life? They do when, you know, some calamity happens. What's the meaning of life? Why this terrible thing? And then after the calamity fades, then they're back to business as usual. So, but a devotee isn't dependent upon calamity to be thoughtful. They're cultivated, if it's not there already. You lost? Like, practically speaking, there is two starting points that make it real easy. In occupational work, there's some income. So if this is even preparation for occupation, then how will I use that income? That's one thing. In Krishna service. Another is, if I carry strong Krishna consciousness with me into the office or into the lab or into the workplace, then that's a gift that can be given to other people, even if I don't speak it, just by carrying that Krishna consciousness. So I'm Krishna's little messenger over here in this work area. And if I can sustain Krishna consciousness in the work environment, what happens? It's going to affect people. Unnoticeably, but it will affect people. And, you know, things start to happen. For example, you know, you distribute prasadam in the workplace. And that has its effect. You remain very calm and peaceful. Even when there's, you know, exams or deadlines and stuff and something, you know, you're always fixed because you're Krishna conscious. And people that are around you, they're having some calamity, they see that you're a spiritual person. And they'll, you know, it just happens that way. They'll ask something. You're always calm and, you know, I'm dealing with this. Can I share this thing with you? And then you have a chance to speak something higher than what their conception of life is, without pushing it on them, just by being Krishna conscious in the workplace. And so forth and so on. I mean, one can realize how Krishna is helping one, protecting one, by your Krishna consciousness. There's many, it unfolds in a very interesting way, that it's very clear Krishna's doing things. And even just the simple, you know, I don't go through all this stress that these people are going through. My mind's not zooming all over the place about nonsense and garbage and, you know, the things that people talk about in the workplace, in the, it is even in school. They're time wasters. I'm protected from that, those time wasting things. So that I can give my time to other things, the things that are really important. I'm being protected by this devotional service. And that appreciation communicates. It's transmitted. It works like that. And the more and more and more there are such example-setting persons, example-carrying persons in the world becomes a different place. It's not that each of you must become great acharyas. That's, you know, that may happen, may not happen, but that's not the standard of serving Krishna. One can serve Krishna according to one's capacity, whatever that capacity is that Krishna gives. You can be Krishna's emissary. You can carry that message by achar at least, And when you do that by achar, then prachar circumstances arise. My business here is to please Krishna. By my example, by my qualities. So you cultivate inwardly. Because there isn't such a grand opportunity of outward expression. Unless it's appreciated. And Krishna will give prompts so that that can be expressed outwardly. But inwardly, cultivate. Okay, here I am. And now I've got some mission, some service for Krishna to do here. You've heard these things, yes? And so much more. Training in how to do your occupation in Krishna consciousness. It has to be cultivated outside of, you know, the morning and evening sadhana activities. Otherwise, the sadhana activities will not be as strong, not be as fruitful. Anything else?
Maharaj, like, there are people who may very sincerely, through some one's advice or otherwise, may take to some demigod worship, and they do follow very sincerely whatever.
Sure, and Krishna makes their faith strong, he says in Bhagavad Gita.
Yes, Maharaj. Then in their life, when there are difficulties, they pray and they feel protected,
sure,
their faith strengthens.
Sure.
So how they can then come to a platform of understanding that what is the actual worship and...
Through association. Through association. That's your mission. Meeting such people and providing association. It's not only, you can say things, but it's not just the things that you say, it's by spiritual influence. It comes down to that. Not just having, you know, a better answer to their... Our business is not to challenge or disturb their faith. Our business is give spiritual influence. I'm sure you've met some people. I have met so many such people. Not just demigod worship, so many other kinds of worship. Everyone has some faith. And how does one move from faith in something to faith in Krishna? Association starts with. Just in Vrindavan, I was speaking with someone who, you know, since childhood, just as you described, worshipping Shiva, and when she chants Om Namo Shivaya, she feels this, and when she gets stressed out, she chants Om Namo Shivaya, and she always feels this. Doesn't have that same feeling when she chants Krishna's name, but she has some appreciation for the devotees. And some acceptance of, conceptually, worship of Krishna is everything. But then stressors come and she chants Om Namo Shivaya and she feels some relief. So, anyway, we've all encountered those situations, or quite possibly in our own lives we were doing something before worshipping Krishna. Whatever that something was, how did we transit from that something to worshipping Krishna? And the same thing with other people. It may not have anything to do, at least initially, with a philosophical explanation. It may not. It may just have to do with someone, you know, finding that someone is a very attractive individual, liking their association. One devotee I'm thinking of, in their workplace, when somebody found out that they were a Hare Krishna devotee, they panicked. Oh, stop. You don't know what these people are. This is a Western person thinking, oh, they're bad. But then they just watched this devotee grow and grow and grow and grow and grow and grow and grow in Krishna consciousness. And then when they found out that their spouse had cancer, they went to this devotee saying, you know, you're always so peaceful and I've got this terrible, stressful. So it's just by influence, by association. Well, they were against. But they benefited by the presence of Krishna consciousness in the heart of that devotee. So they began to appreciate. And started reading Bhagavad Gita, and started chanting, started visiting the temple. This is a Western person. And so on. Adausha dhatata sadhu sangha. You're trained the same way, isn't it? Yes. When there's some trust in an individual, then you can hear from that individual. And when hearing from that individual, although there may be so many years, lifetime of something else, there's trust over here. So I listen and measure. Whereas otherwise it's just dismissal. Anything else? Okay. Hare Krishna. Nimo, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai.